Parshas Truma. The pasuk begins, "Vaydabar Hashem Moshe Lemor Dabar Bnei Yisrael, V'yikhu Li Truma." Take for me a truma, which means, I guess, an offering. Me'es Kol Ish Asher Yidvenu Liboy. So, what are we taking? Lots of different stuff. What are the things? Zav Vachesef and Nachoshes. Zav means gold. Kesef is silver. What's Nachoshes? Copper. Tcheles ve'argomon v'shalai ashani v'sheish v'izim. Tcheles is, and you know what tcheles is? What? Turquoise. And what's argomon?
Purple
or
magenta?
It's purple.
Maroon.
No.
Maroon, is that purple?
Violet.
Another one.
Violet.
Burgundy.
Yes.
No,
it's purple.
Toilas Shani is red. Sheish v'izim. Kitzer, all these things. Scheles v'argomim v'salashim v'sheish v'izim v'oris elim ha'adomim v'oris t'choshim v'atzei shitim. And then they bring wood. Shitim wood is a type of wood. V'shemen lama'or is oil. V'sam l'shem v'mishcha u'v'l'ktoris ha'samim. That's what they're using all the oil for. Va'avnei shoyham is the stones that were put on the ephod, which is up here. Va'avnei muluyim is the stones that were put. There was a, what's it called? There was a, on the choshen, what's it called? What'd you call it again? There's a whole, what?
Grooves.
Dents, like in the choshen. A niche, and they were placed. Avnei Miluim were there to fill that niche, and they were. Those are those stones. There's numerous different stones. So I want to. We'll start with a question. It's not really what I want to speak about, but it's what I want to speak about. Because it's what I want to speak about. It's just not what I want to say. Which is as follows. The question is as follows. If you look, a person looks at all these different materials. So they're going clearly in descending order of their chashivos. The first one is gold. Second one is silver. Third one is copper. The fourth one is now all of a sudden we speak about materials. The most expensive material is tcheles. It's very hard to make tcheles. Then argomon. Everything is going slowly in descending order. Then it goes to wood. Then it goes to just oil. So it seems to be going in descending order. There's one aberration to that norm. There's one exception to that rule. You know what that is? It's the last one, which is the Avnei Shoyim, Avnei Miluyim, which are precious jewels. These are precious stones. The Gemara says that they're very expensive. Right? And one of them got lost, and they tried to find one. They went to a guy. They wanted to buy it off him for a lot of money. Anyone know that story? Anyone know that story? Went to a guy and he wouldn't sell it to them. You know why not?
His
father was sleeping on his father's pillow. They wanted to buy one of the Avnei Shoyim, the Avnei Miluyim. That's what they wanted to buy. A lot of money. These things are expensive. So why did the bottom list? You know where they should really be? The very first, and ended up being the very bottom. What is going on over here? This question the Or Chaim HaKadosh asks, and he says the following answer. He says, why does the Kadosh Baruch Hu put things in order of their value, of their worth? Not because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was like impressed with that, but rather a person who worked hard and he had to amass, you know, and he had to give from his gold. So that is obviously came from it was harder for him to give that than for someone else. It's harder to give gold than it is to give silver. And it's harder to give silver than it is to give copper. And the harder it is, the more HaKadosh Baruch Hu appreciates it. So then why are these stones at the bottom? Because the Medrash says that these stones were brought miraculously by the Anani HaKavod, kind of just like deposited them right there. Klal Yisrael just picked them up, gave them to the Mishkan. And there's a saying, easy come, easy go, no big deal. It wasn't hard. They just got it. It's like, here it is, 12 stones, okay, here are the 12 stones. All they had to do is they were a delivery service. Easy come, easy go. Kadosh Baruch Hu is machshiv when people work hard. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants people to work hard. Sometimes people say, you're working me hard. And I say back to them, either work hard,
go home,
or go home. Go hard or go home. That's it. It's hard, right? That's what it's supposed to be. It's not hard, it's not impressive. That's what it's supposed to be. Anyway, that's what I want to say. That's not what I wanted to speak about. It's just what I wanted to say. So we speak about over here, all these things that were donated, were all donated for the kalim of the Beit. Go hard or go home. You see what I'm saying? So we were talking about the things that were donated over here to the Beis HaMikdash. And what were they donated for? For the kalim. There's lots of different kalim that were in the Beis HaMikdash. Lots of different things that were used for the Beis HaMikdash. It's actually interesting. Anyone know any of the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash? Can you name me a keli of the Beis HaMikdash? What?
Kiar,
good one. That's random. Over there. Menorah is another one. Mizbeach Hazav. Mizbeach Hanachoshes. Shulchan. What was that? Aroin, that's good. Okay, you guys basically hit all of them. Those are the kalim. And this week's parasha speaks about, you know, the kalim and how the kalim were structured and how they were built. And there's an interesting thing on top of the aron. What was perched on top of the aron? The kruvim. What was the kruvim? It was a picture of what? What? Angel, young angel-like figures as they were facing each other. What was inside of the aron?
Broken luchos.
The broken luchos and the not broken luchos. You don't forget about those. And there's a Sefer Torah. There's in Tzinsenes Haman, who was also over there.
Was it oil? No.
What? Nope. No,
no
oil.
Wasn't.
So, Rabbi, say, what is the? What would you say that the Aron represents in your mind? What does the Aron represent? What? Kedusha. I would say it represents Torah. What does it have inside of it? The Luchais and the Sefer Torah. And the people are sitting on top of it. The Medrash says they were, what were they doing? There's two people, they were looking at each other. They were learning with each other. The Medrash says. This was on the side. On the side. Excellent. Al Kopanim, but the Pashtus, the Oroin, is what do we call a place where we put the Sefer Torah? What's it called? Oron. It's the Oron Kodesh. The Oron represents the Torah. That's what we would understand. What does the Mizbeach represent, for example? What happens on the Mizbeach? It's not, I mean, just be, it's very obvious, I think. Karbanos, or we'll call it Avoida. Avoida is service, right? And that's, Shulchan is a tough one. Shulchan is a rough, what does the Shulchan represent? Chesed? Interesting. Yes. I was thinking something along those lines, maybe, but I'm not sure. I haven't seen any source for that. But Shulchan represents sustenance. It's the bread is food, and it represents sustenance. So listen to this. There's an interesting thing. There are three different types of ksarim in the world. There's keser, Torah. You ever heard of a keser Torah? What? What was that?
Said I heard of an atar.
Okay, it's a similar type of thing. It has a keser on top. What else? Anyone else? Another keser? Keser Malchus, actually. There's one more called Keser Kahuna. These are the three different types of ksarim. Keser Kahuna, Keser Malchus, and Keser Torah. So the Kli Yoker points out the following thing. There are three of the kelim in the Beis HaMikdash that have a zer Zahav Saviv. What is it? What does it mean? A zer Zahav Saviv. It's like a small little border, which kind of looks like a crown going around it. What are those three, Caleb? The Aron, the Shulchan, and the Mizbeach. Why do those three things have crowns going around them?
Because they represent the
Ksarim. Because they represent three Ksarim. What does the Aron represent? Keser Torah. What does the Mizbeach represent? Keser Kohuna. I'll explain to you why. And what does the Shulchan represent? Keser Malchus. Why? What is the job of a Melech? Does anyone know what does the Melech have to do? What is Malchus based off of? Well, it's a hard question. It's called Beis Lechem Yehuda. The job of a king is to be able to provide for all of his people. He has to provide for them. King has to make sure that everyone has food, has what to eat, what to do. That's what the king does. The king's in charge of the economy, right? And back in the day, if you know what they did if they didn't have enough money? They went to war. That's the way you solve that problem, is you just, you know, take someone else's money. But that's a king's job. A king's job is to make sure the economy is going well. So which one of those three would you say represents the economy? The Mizbeach, the Shulchan, or the Aron? The Shulchan represents the economy, represents sustenance. That's the Malchus, the Keser of Malchus. The Kohen's job is to do what? What does the Kohen do? It does Avodah all day. He's bringing Korbanos. Right? That's the Kohen's job. So the Keser Kohuna would be represented in the by the Mizbeach. That means most of the day by the Mizbeach. The Keser Torah is represented by the Aron, as we mentioned, that the Aron has inside of the Luchas Habris. The Aron has right next to the Sefer Torah. The Aron is learning Torah. So says the Kli Yakor, based on this, I want to say an idea. Says the Kli Yakor, if you look, each time the Torah writes about this Zer, you put saviv, it goes around it. There's a zer. Vasisa loy, for example. Vasisa loy, zer zahav saviv. This is speaking about the shulchan. Vasisa loy, zer zahav saviv. And by the mizbeach. Vasisa loy, zer zahav saviv. By the aron, it says something else. Vasisa alav, zer zahav saviv. It doesn't say loy, alav. On him. What's the difference between loy and on him? Says the Kli Yakor, the pshat is as follows. He said, who can wear the Keser Kohuna? Who's allowed to wear the Keser Kohuna, Ke'ilo? Who's allowed to, who? Kohen Gadol. Who can be a Kohen Gadol? Kohen. What does that mean? Can any of us decide to be a Kohen?
No.
So who's allowed to do that? Only Shevet Levi, only specific people are allowed to wear the Keser Kohuna. If you're not that from that family, you don't have that lineage, you can't do it. It's reserved for individuals. Correct? Who's allowed to wear Keser Malchus?
Sons of Yehuda.
Sons of Yehuda. Is anyone else allowed to wear Keser Malchus? No. It happened once in history. Who did it? Chashmonaim, they got punished for that. They did. I mean, they had a reason why they thought they had to do it, because there was no one else there. So they stepped up, but the mice, they got punished for it. But the only one who's allowed to wear it is Beis Yehuda. What? Shaul was before Malchus Beis David started. That's why Shaul was able to do it. Shaul was the first king, even before that. But technically, after that, once David became king, only... So there are specific people that are reserved. Someone else cannot come and say, I would like to be king. He can't do that. Who is allowed to wear the Keser Torah?
Anybody.
Anyone who wants to. Rambam says, any person. That's Vayigba Liboy Bedarki Hashem, which means that he decides that he wants to be that guy, so that he can do it. He has to just work hard. The person works hard. He could be that person. So says the Kli Yakor. So by the other of the crowns, it says Vasisa Loi, because it's a very particular address. Who's the one who's supposed to wear the crown? As opposed to when you're dealing with the Aron, there's no particular person who's supposed to wear the crown. Got it? Okay. Now, I have a question which I'd like to pose to you boys, and perhaps we'll discuss it and we'll end with that, which is as follows. We didn't discuss one of the very prime Kalim in the Beis HaMikdash, which is the Menorah. What does the Menorah represent? Anyone know?
Torah.
Excellent. Why does the Menorah represent Torah? The light of Torah. The light of the Menorah. And there's lots of different Ramazim I can show you aside for light. So I have a problem. I seem to have what seems to me to be a stira. What represents Torah? Aaron? Menorah. Which one is it? Let me just flush out this question for a second. Flush out the question. It says Moshe Rabbeinu had a hard time making the menorah. Moshe Rabbeinu had a hard time making the menorah. Until HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him a special thing how to do it. It was a hard time. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu have a hard time making the menorah? Because it was made out of one piece. So, but why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make that the menorah is something that was hard for Moshe Rabbeinu to make? Because when it comes to learning Torah, you got to know something. Either go hard or go home. It was hard. It was very hard. It's made out of one piece. What does that mean, one piece? It means you can't just say, okay, I'll do a little now and I'll do a little later, and I'm taking a break in the middle. And you know, a person has to be able to hold the whole thing together. You got to keep it together. That's very hard. You're right, it's hard. That's why Torah is represented by the menorah. And the menorah, the whole Torah is intertwined like the menorah. That is correct. So, Rabbi Issa, I have a question over here. What represents Torah? Is it the menorah? Or is it the Aron? What do you say? Any answers for this question? So I have two answers, which I don't know if either one of them is right, but I want to hear what you guys have to say. Anyone have an answer? Both. What do you need two for? Two Torahs?
Torah
Shebichsav, Torah Shebalpeh. That was my first knee-jerk reaction. Is Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebalpeh? Well, help me out over here. Which one is Torah Shebichsav and which one is Torah Shebalpeh? Aaron should be Torah Shebichsav. The Moshe should be Torah Shebalpeh. Makes sense. But let me ask you two questions. Question number one. Where do we speak about a person getting the Keser Torah? Is Keser Torah and Torah Shebichsav or Keser Torah and Torah Shebalpeh? The crown of Torah that we say anyone who wants, as long as he works hard, is going to be able to get it. Is that a Torah Shebichsav? What's Torah Shebichsav? Torah Shebichsav is just Chumash, Navi, Ksuvim. That's the whole thing. Is that where the Keser Torah is? Huh? Not. The Keser Torah is in Torah Shebalpeh. So where should that Keser be on the Menorah? Might be a little weird. How are you going to put a Keser on a Menorah? But okay. Well, you have to figure that out. But this is in the wrong place. The Keser should be in the Keser Torah. That's one question. The other question is that there's a fascinating remez that they have over here in the how many words are there in the first pasuk in Bereishis? Seven words in the first pasuk of Bereishis, correct? How many together? How many branches were there of the menorah? How many words are there in the first pasuk in Shemais?
Seven.
Got a fun actually here. You guys, you know what this is? This is in Tetzaveh. What?
Nine.
I can't see so. Yeah. Okay, Rabbi Isai, I'm going to let you do this as a... Here it is. So if you make the cheshbon, the Hamikdavar says that every single pasuk in Sefer, the first pasuk in all of the Chamisha Chamisha Torah is hinted to in the Midos of the Menorah, which would imply that the Menorah somehow represents Torah Shebichsav, not just Torah Shebalpeh. So what is the difference between, so what are these two things that we have? We have on the one hand Torah Shebichsav, on one hand we have the Aron, the other hand they have the Menorah. I'm not sure, maybe one is Torah Shebichsav, one is Torah Shebalpeh. I'd like to suggest something else. I'll let you boys think about it. If anyone has anything that they'd like to share with me, I'm happy to hear it. Which of the Shvatim would you say represents Torah? Which of the Shvatim? There's 12 Shvatim. Is it Levi? Or is it Yisachar? Which one? Is it Levi or Yisachar? I think it's actually both of them. It's interesting. Levi, it says, is Lo Shevet Levi Belvad. Shevet Levi are the ones that sit and learn Torah. That's what they do all day. They're the one, they're some. And then there's also Yisachar. Yisachar had to deal with Zvulun. So it seems like really Yisachar was supposed to work. Levi is the only one who wasn't supposed to work. He was not meant to work. He doesn't own property. He doesn't have any farms. Hashem didn't give him that. Hashem says, you learn. Levi learns. Yisachar is supposed to work. What did he do? He made a deal with Zvulun and he opted out. He was the one who decided he wants to learn, even though perhaps he was meant to do something else. So there's two different people that became the symbol of Torah. There's Levi, who he was chosen for that beforehand. And then there was Yisachar, who himself chose to be that. Perhaps the two of them represent the two different Kalim in the Beis HaMikdash, the Aron on the one hand, which is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the Menorah on the other hand. That I am hoping that you perhaps will have some insight to, and I hope that you get some more thoughts from the different Kalim. But you look around and all these things that we speak about, the size of the Kalim, the location of the Kalim, everything that's there is in some way reflective of what the Kalim represents as far as our HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Midas and the way that we interact. So that's why the truth is that probably more than any other topic, the halachas of the Kalim take up a tremendous amount of time in the Torah. And it seems to be like, what's the point of this? It's not even relevant to us. But there's a lot of spiritual forces and things that play based on these things, and a person should try to learn whatever we can. Hopefully over the course of the next few weeks we'll try to do a little bit more to try to bring out and to have enhanced appreciation for the Kalim and the Begadim. My dear friends, have a great day.